May it please the Court. Rose Daly Rooney for the State of Arizona. And arguing for appellants on the issues of the viability of the Americans with Disabilities Act claim and the Arizonans with Disabilities Act claim. I will reserve 2 minutes for my co-counsel, Mr. Rico, to address the standing issues.
At some point, I hope you will address the question of what difference the Arizona claim makes. You don't need to do it now. But whether there's different remedies or, you know, does it, anyway, whether it has independent force.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
This is appeal of a dismissal for failure to state a claim under Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Arizonans with Disabilities Act. The points that I would like to make are four points. What is the core issue drilled down to that the answer to that will say whether we have viability at this threshold point to move forward. Number two, what is the answer to that core issue? Number three, is that answer the same under both the Arizonans with Disabilities Act and Title III of the ADA? And four, if the court does not accept this construction that we have offered, what are the risks to the ADA and the Arizonans with Disabilities Act? This is an appeal of a failure to state a claim for a failure to provide, for Harkins' failure to provide auxiliary aids and services. The core of this appeal is whether captioning, audio descriptions, and the equipment that a theater would need to install or equip it with in order to show those captions and descriptions is under the auxiliary aids and services definition. If they are auxiliary aids and services, as we contend they are, then they cannot also be different services outside the scope of the ADA and Arizonans with Disabilities Act, because the ADA and Americans with Disabilities Act regulate it. They require the provision of auxiliary aids and services.
Let me just be clear to make sure I know what's being asserted here. Your brief notes that film studios prepare versions of at least a large number of first-run movies, perhaps not all, that could be utilized by theaters in conjunction with other equipment to make either the audio description or the open or closed captioning available. I understand your argument from the brief to be based on the premise that the film is available to the theater, not that the theater is required itself to do whatever it would have to do to provide the audio description or the captioning, but simply focused on providing the equipment that's necessary to make the studio-provided version work with to make it accessible. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is the scope of our lawsuit. That is what
we're not arguing the theater has an independent responsibility to convert films in any way to make them accessible.
We did not request that in the scope of our complaint. And we are not asking for them to caption or describe those movies. Whether that is something that is also required by the ADA, it possibly could be subject to the undue burden and fundamental alteration defenses.
I'm not trying to make you state a position in the case that's not before us. I'm just trying to define the case before us. And I want to confirm that I'm correct in understanding that you're not saying the theaters have an obligation to do what you say the film studios are doing, at least for some films. You're only arguing in this case that for those films where the studio has done that at no additional cost to the theater, then you look to the theater, albeit at some additional cost, to provide the equipment to make those films work.
That is correct, Your Honor. Okay. And the inquiry begins in terms of the answering of that core question is, what, you know, is it an auxiliary aid and service? Are these things? Well, captioning is another effective method of providing orally delivered information to people with hearing impairments. That is the definition of, that is contained in the definition of auxiliary aids and services in both the Title III of the ADA. It's in the main section of the ADA. That definition of auxiliary aids and services is in the main section, and that's relevant because it affects not only Title III of the ADA, but Title II of the ADA for state and local government. It is also in the main section of the Arizonans with Disabilities Act. an audio description, and the definitions are the same under both acts, is, well, the definition of auxiliary aid and services is, and that is, other, it also includes other effective methods of making visually delivered materials available to individuals with visual impairments. And both statutes, both definitions require that it includes the acquisition or modification of equipment. And that's what's at issue here, acquisition of equipment that can be installed so that these captions and descriptions can be provided to people with sensory impairments.
They are a little different, though, right? The captioning, you still see the movie, you still have a visual experience. You can't obviously have a visual experience if you're blind. And hearing a description of Titanic, let's say, strikes me as fundamentally different from actually seeing it with caption or without caption. I have an easier time understanding how captions can be an aid than how video descriptions sound to me like a fundamental alteration. I find it more difficult to see that as merely an aid.
Well, first of all, the Department of Justice, in their interpretive guidance or their appendix, does recognize audio descriptions as a form of auxiliary aids and services. What's before this court now is we didn't get past the door. We didn't get out of the chute. We have stated a claim for a failure to provide auxiliary aids and services. The audio descriptions does provide information about the key visual features in the movie information that will help people who are blind, who are hearing the dialogue, understand some of the context of what's going on, and so that they can keep hearing the soundtrack and the dialogue and have some things like man entered and they're starting a fight. And then that's just a very small thing that occurs. Because it's an auxiliary aid and service, then we look at, it's not till later that we look at the fundamental alteration issue, which is an affirmative defense that is belongs to the defendant and which we didn't even get to because we weren't able to go back and work on our case.
But I thought I heard you say at the very beginning that they're flip sides of the same coin. So if it's an auxiliary aid and service, it can't be a fundamental alteration, vice versa. Maybe I misunderstood what you said.
I meant to say.
So by asking you the question whether it's a fundamental, I took you at your word in you having said that. That if it is a fundamental alteration, it can't be. I mean, maybe I misunderstood.
I need to clarify, because what I said was, if it is an auxiliary aid and service, then it's not a different service that is outside the scope of the ADA at the threshold. Now, there are some accommodations or some auxiliary aids and services that may not be required at the end of the day when we went to trial. Based on whether or not there is an undue burden or a fundamental alteration. But at the threshold, it is within the auxiliary aids and services definition because it provides an effective method of getting visual information from the film, from the visual features of the film, into a format that a person who is blind can understand.
Why isn't that a different service?
Why is it not a different service, Your Honor? Because it's an auxiliary aid and service.
That doesn't answer the question. Why doesn't that turn a movie into a radio program? But it's just fun. It really goes back to the question, is that really an auxiliary object? Is it a device to appreciate the movie, or is it something that converts it into something very different? Now, I realize you reach that question later under the statute with the affirmative defenses, but I think you reach it as well just trying to decide what's auxiliary. Some things convert the object or the communication so completely that it might not fairly be described as auxiliary anymore. Why isn't that the case here?
Because one is, when you take the word auxiliary and you tease it out of the term auxiliary aids and services, then if that were done that way, then it's not being consistent with the Act. The Act defines auxiliary aids and services as a legal term, and this fits within the legal term. It also looks at what the Department of Justice...
I'm not sure that's... What do you mean the Act defines it as a legal term?
Well, it's... It
gives some examples. Does it really define it?
Yes, it gives examples, but it also says, and other effective methods of making visually delivered information available to people with visual impairments. And just because a term is unspecified doesn't mean that it's not included within the definition. For example, in this, the Supreme Court indicated that foreign flagships, cruise ships, are in the definition of public accommodation, even though they're not specified, just like prisons are in the definition of state entities, even though they are not specified. Even when Congress may not have contemplated that a particular this definition would be covered with that, that as new technology developed, it can be assumed under that non-exhaustive and very broad definition. But
does
I want
mean that the theater would have to provide the hearing devices to the persons that are hearing it? Do they have to provide a special, like, hearing devices for the persons, or do the persons bring their own?
In the reply brief, we have a picture of two types of auxiliary aids and services. And people who are going to have the visual, who are going to have the audio descriptions, they wear a headset. The headset would be equipment that would be provided by the movie theater.
The headset would be provided by the theater.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. Now, one thing that in answering the auxiliary aid and service question, I want to return to your question, Judge Clifton, too, about the issue of if it's different. Well, let me ask. Is that one thing that the Department of Justice indicated in their amicus brief is that it's important to distinguish between the principal goods and services and the auxiliary aid and service, the means of perceiving the main principal goods and services. And the goods and services here, or in this case the services, is the screening of the movies. And that's what we're looking at if the movie fundamentally altered for the movie going public. And the movie is not fundamentally altered by the movie going public, and that it because here are people sitting in their movie seats if they are visually impaired and they have a headset on. That is not affecting even a negligible effect upon that. And that's what we need to separate out.
But the question is, I mean, that is one consideration, whether it's affecting everybody else. But also the question is whether what we're delivering to that viewers who are using these devices is the same service as being delivered to the public as a whole, or whether it's a different service.
When you go to a movie, you pay for the visual and the here, and you pay for the soundtrack and you pay for the visual. If a person goes to a movie and one of those is not there, and there's a problem with one of those, you're not going to feel like you got your full $14 value out of that ticket. Someone's probably going to go and complain to the movie theater management. What we want for people who are deaf and blind, no, we know that we are not going to make them see or make them hear. That is not what we're trying to do. But as the full and equal enjoyment means by the Department of Justice is that right to participate and to have an equal opportunity to obtain the same results as others to the extent possible with such accommodations as may be required by the Act and the regulations. And what is required by the Act is the provision of auxiliary aids and services. And if we to look at the because of if we go to the auxiliary aids and services provision, it's because of auxiliary aids and services. That's what they need in order to be able to perceive. That's the means to perceive that information.
Before you sit down, can you explain to me, do you have your reply brief, page 6, you have those pictures? Do you have them in front of you?
Yes, Your Honor. It's in the reply brief on page
6. I have it. Do you have it?
Okay. I don't have it in front of me, but I know what they look like. Would you want to ask me a question about that?
Yeah. Can you get it in front of you? So I understand the picture on the left, they are sitting there with headphones, and I take it these are headphones that transmit on a local frequency these descriptors, right? I'm trying to understand exactly how the thing on the right works. These are the closed captions?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Is this plugged in, the stand there, is that plugged into something, or is that projected from the back, or how does that work?
That is the plexiglass thing is plugged into the cup holder. It is displaying captions which are off of a video text display in the back of the on the back of the theater wall.
I'm sorry. How do those letters get on the screen?
The letters get on the screen because they superimpose from a. If this were the front of the theater in the movies, there is a video text display at the back of the theater and on the wall, and it reflects onto these panels. And it looks like it's superimposed on the bottom of the screen.
So you have to be in a particular seat at a particular location to be able to use this?
No, Your Honor, you don't. You may take your, you get your, you get your plexiglass thing, and you walk into the theater, you choose your seat, and you put it in the cup holder in that seat.
Now, the photograph here appears to be a special row and is not attached to cup holders, but there are poles that are holding the thing up. I take it they've worked out logistically how to make it work in a normal seat, the stadium seating and whatever else, but I can imagine some practical difficulties.
The logistics are worked out in terms of, yes, now you can put it in a cup holder in that. And
how would this be visible, or what would other viewers see, people behind, people next, and so on?
As you can see, that her head is, this is just in front of her, that's viewer, and it's not above her head, so it's just in front of her in her little space.
At what stage does any court reach the impact on others' question? I mean, you've been to a movie theater, and the person in front of you turns on the cell phone, and the light from the cell phone starts shining. Other people are going to notice that. I can imagine a practical concern. Somebody sitting in the row in front of you sticks their plexiglass up there, and suddenly I've got the light from those subtitles, too. Things have to get balanced. This may not be the appropriate stage of Rule 12b-6 motion. Where do you think that comes into the calculation?
That is for an undue burden and fundamental alteration stage, and it is a defense that was required. It's of the defendant must prove it up. And also it's yet to come, and also the law does say there are cases, including the Fortune case that this court held, that some negligible impact upon people who are not disabled may be required in some cases, and that doesn't rise to the level of a fundamental alteration.
I guess there's a possibility, and I don't know whether it's something you propose or you would find acceptable, is of having certain viewings with open captions. You'd have certain versions, they show the film every 3 hours, that every fourth time or something, they would have an open caption viewing, right? That would be another possibility.
If the as far as our lawsuit goes, we asked for increased captioning. So they could provide open captioning, closed captioning, or a combination of captioning to satisfy what we are seeking in the complaint, if I've answered.
Well, the problem with open captioning is that it really does alter the experience of everybody else. Maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. I sometimes have trouble at home hearing what they're saying. I turn on the captions because I have no idea, especially those English movies.
That's because you're old.
Yeah.
What I'm actually focusing in on is the question in theaters. They could do that not on every show. It could be done selected shows. Would that be something that's acceptable? Or
the open caption projection, which in the record it indicates in our complaints that some chains do use open caption projection, and they can turn on the captions if a person who is deaf wants it, or they can have they could have showings, but they can just wait till someone comes in, and so it's a various, and they can or they can indicate which shows will be. Those things are all, as long as they lead to people having full an opportunity to see the movies that are available that the filmmakers produce, that would satisfy the relief in our case. There was one you proposed.
What the studios provide is not open captioning, but closed, right?
What the studios provide is captioning. It could be, if they used an open caption system, then like a second projector that puts it on the screen, they could use those same captions. They can use them in the closed caption systems or the open caption systems.
Well, I understand that, but... Do the studios provide the closed caption even though they don't provide open caption?
The studios do not need to provide a special print any longer in order to provide the captions. They can just provide it on a separate disc that's used in whatever system if the movie theater wants to use, of the systems that are out there now.
Well, as Judge Kozinski says, the open captions are a problem to other viewers. If the open captions are not necessary, then closed captions would be the much better basis.
Well, and everything is about whether or not, it's not just any change, but it's whether it's a fundamental change. But you're correct, it's correct, Your Honor, that this lawsuit doesn't require, it gives the theater the option to make the choice. And that's what Title III of the ADA and the regulations indicate, that the choice resides with the public accommodation as long as they're providing an effective method of auxiliary aid and service, and they can make that choice. They should take into
consideration. What choice is available, whether you use open or closed captioning?
Right, or a combination. It would be, you know, as long as they're providing captioning, we are not trying to tell the business which type of captioning to use, as long as they provide an auxiliary aid and service. And, Your Honor, may I just answer your one question that you posed earlier about ASDA? It is exactly the same as the ADA in many ways. It has a similar enforcement procedure. It has a definition, the main section, and auxiliary aids and services. There is only one way in which it is different, and it is a drafting discrepancy in which the auxiliary aids and services provision falls under the associational discrimination thing.
Which is a problem. It looks like might have been a drafting error.
And if this court were looking at
it makes no sense as written. Right.
If it still makes sense, because the auxiliary aids and services definition applies to people with disabilities,
it says in this section, right?
It's right. That is
weird.
But if what is important, if this court were reviewing that case, they would be looking at, if you were looking at whether or not it was constitutional, whether it told businesses what.
I understand that issue, and I really I don't need to talk about it. That wasn't my question. The question is, let's say you were to, I mean, you're going to prevail or not prevail on your federal claim, right? Whatever happens to the federal claim. The Arizona claim is no broader than the federal claim. So is there any reason to worry about the state claim at all?
The state of Arizona is bringing this claim on the basis of the Arizona with Disabilities Act claim alone. So we don't have jurisdiction to bring in a Title III claim. So we're here on the basis of ASDA. Because the statute...
I see. So in order to maintain the state in the case, there needs to be a state claim. The state can't bring a federal claim?
That is correct, Your Honor, and that's why we want to make sure we've answered this court's questions about the Arizonans with Disabilities Act being as vital and as the Title III of the ADA. And despite that one drafting discrepancy, it does include in the enforcement scheme that courts can order auxiliary aids and services, which they wouldn't need to do if it was interpreted in a way that it only applies to associational discrimination, and the legislature codified their intent that the compliance with Title III should be coextensive with our statute. And in that, they dropped a footnote and said that it incorporates by reference. The auxiliary aids and services provision was one of the provisions that it did. So we feel that this court, in the shoes of an Arizona court, by which has not ever addressed this provision, would say that it is... ARS 1-211 is that it should be liberally construed to give it effect. And the legislative effect is very clear in looking at the statute as a whole, even though there is one minor discrepancy error.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I guess we have the guy with 2 minutes on standing.
Yeah. Right. Mr. Rico? We'll give you 2 minutes because so much of the extra time we took up with questions.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is J.J. Rico. I represent plaintiffs interveners Lindstrom and Wenger, and I will address the issue of standing. It's undisputed that plaintiff interveners have standing to the Harkins North Valley 16 Theater. What remains in dispute is whether or not my clients have standing as to all of defendants' theaters. I put forth before the court today that we have established the constitutional standing requirements set forth in the Supreme Court case of Lujan, and also the court should consider policy considerations when extending standing to all of defendants' theaters. The three-prong test in Lujan requires injury in fact, causation, and redressability. I understand from the briefs the defendant has submitted that the question is whether or not my clients have actually established an injury in fact, and whether or not they have an intent to return. And they have established both. They have clear and concise knowledge, personal knowledge, as to defendants' barriers or lack of auxiliary aids or services as to all of defendants' theaters at the time they filed the complaint. They acquire this knowledge from personally contacting other of defendants' theaters beyond the North Valley 16. They also did what you or I would do in visiting their website to determine whether or not they provided captioned or described movies. In addition to their own website, Harkins' website, they visited a third-party website that provides a listing of accessible theaters that provide this technology. They've also filed a charge of discrimination in the present case, which they received a reasonable cause determination, which concluded that no theaters, not a single theater at the time, did not possess descriptive narration. As for captioning, they were notified that there was only two theaters at the time that provided open caption films. So clearly they had knowledge. Based on this knowledge, they were deterred from returning to Harkins movie theaters.
They were deterred from returning to the one theater where they actually went. You can't return to a place you haven't gone to, right?
Well, the ADA does not require them to engage in a futile gesture of actually entering all of defendants' theaters once they have the knowledge or notice that I just spoke of.
No, I understand, but you can't return to some place you haven't been. It's just the physical fact of nature.
Right.
So what you have to say is that they're deterred from going there in the first place.
That is correct.
These are theaters all over Arizona.
That's correct.
Which is a fair-sized state.
Correct.
even by California standards, it's a...
Correct.
Those of us on Small Island, it's huge.
There we go. So can they really establish standing as to all those theaters without, you know, some showing that, in fact, they planned to go there, had wanted to go there, and failed to go because of the barriers?
I think they can, and my second point addresses that question. Policy considerations to find otherwise, to limit standing to the North Valley 16 theaters would lead to piecemeal litigation or piecemeal compliance. I know it is a concern of the court of judicial economy. We would have potentially 25 other similar
would the
lawsuits.
Case really be different if we're limited to the one complex? I mean, if the case winds up establishing law that the provision for auxiliary aids applies in the fashion that you're advocating, that would seem to be precedent that would be a word of the wise for owners of any other theaters wherever they were within the circuit. Is it really necessary to establish standing with regard to each individual theater in the circuit?
I would say yes. I mean, if we look at DeLille, that case was taken upon. There was a settlement agreement reached, and standing was even questioned at that point. So I want to maintain and preserve standing to all of defendants' theaters because I do not want to come before you again with the question of standing when we have a settlement agreement signed or we have reached a conclusion.
Standing is frequently a hard issue. In this case, I'm not sure why it's an issue at all. Maybe I should know this, but I've forgotten if I did. Are you seeking damages, or is this purely for injunctive relief?
Purely for injunctive relief.
If whether certain individuals have standing or not, if we establish as the law that injunctive relief is available, then somebody goes to those other theaters, and there's probably somebody with a disability that goes to the other theaters. It's not like the other theaters are going to win in a different case if they didn't win in this case. So does it really – I guess what I'm getting to is I'm not sure that this is a case for us to take up standing, which is sometimes a hard issue.
I think you are correct. It should direct other theaters to comply with your holding if that's the way that you decide to go. However, the ADA has been in existence since 1990, and the Auxiliary Aids and Services provision has required theaters to do so, and they haven't complied with that. So I do have a concern, but I would appreciate...
How long have the captioning technology and the descriptive technology been available by Hollywood, I mean by the movie producers? How long has that been?
If we're talking about closed captioning and then the descriptive narration technology, I believe that its advent or when it began was approximately 1998. As for the closed caption, I'm not sure of a date on the descriptive narration technology.
So it's not quite as far back as you said.
Well,
theaters,
right. My point
can't
was that
do it if Hollywood doesn't come up with it, right?
Or they could produce their own, and then we would evaluate the question of fundamental alteration, as Ms. Daly Rooney discussed earlier.
That's a much bigger mountain for you to move.
It is, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the time.
We'll hear from the other side.
May it please the Court, my name is John Egbert. I represent Harkins. With me at council table is Richard Lustiger, the in-house counsel for Harkins. Like almost every circuit court in the country, the Ninth Circuit has recognized that the ordinary and common sense meaning of Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act is that a place of public accommodation like Harkins is required to provide auxiliary aid or service if it's necessary in order to allow access to the goods or services that the place of public accommodation provides. But Title III does not require places of public accommodation to provide new or different services that they don't already provide. That's completely outside the scope of what Title III requires. The real question before this court is whether the commentary that plaintiffs want Harkins to provide with respect to the movies it displays, and by the way, it's clear that the service that Harkins provides is to merely display or exhibit movies that are produced by others. So it puts them up on the screen. It screens those. That's the service that we provide. Plaintiffs request that Harkins provide an additional service.
Why isn't that an auxiliary under the statute?
It's not auxiliary, Your Honor, because Harkins does not engage currently in any type of commentary or doesn't explain. The easiest example, I think, to correlate this is the situation where another place of public accommodation provides exhibits artwork, art museum exhibits artwork. It doesn't say anything else about the artwork. Granted, a blind person that goes into an art museum will not enjoy it as much as someone who's able to see the Mona Lisa. But they're not required.
Here we have the studios that are providing the basis for both the audio and visual assistance. And the question is whether Harkins should utilize that. And it's hard for me to see why they don't want to.
Well, Your Honor, it's not so much a matter of don't want to, but it is a matter of what is required by Title III. And if it is fundamentally the beginning point that they're not required to provide
But listen to Judge Huggs' question. Don't fight it. What Judge Huggs' question is, you know, if I understand, if I may paraphrase this, your client is there to serve the public. And the people who produce the films have provided this service, whether you call it an auxiliary service, whatever you call it, that better serves your public, the people who pay for, you know, your client to make money and to be in business. What's the issue? Why? I mean, the equipment is not, in the scheme of things, terribly expensive. It would broaden the audience that can frequent your clients' movie theaters. It would make them be in compliance with the law, and even perhaps, if necessary, go beyond what's absolutely required. Why wouldn't they want to do this? What's they don't have to tear down theaters. All they have to do is add a little bit of electronic equipment, which is getting cheaper. By the way, you know, we are not equipped for this, but we managed to set this up in a jiffy.
Your Honor, let me address that. I appreciate your clarification. It is a situation where Harkins does voluntarily do some things that make sense for them to do. They already do, even though not required in their minds to provide open captioning. They do provide limited open captioning. They do provide assistive listening devices that are available at theaters
right.
to amplify.
So they already have the headsets, right?
Well, not those headsets that would be necessary for this new technology that's being developed. It is a situation, Your Honor, that
have headsets cost.
Well, it's not the headsets that are the most expensive. It's the transmittal devices that correlate with the movie and that is very expensive, and it is very expensive. As part of the problem that we have here is that we don't know how many showings. Do they want it available in all of our theaters, in all of the auditoriums within those theaters? Do they want it available with all of the every showing with respect to every...
Like they're willing to talk, you know?
The practical problems may be there, and there's a stage of the case that there's certainly an opportunity, if the case would get that far, to deal with undue burden, alteration, and so forth. But we're here at the starting gate, and I guess I share my colleague's sense that I understand there's certainly expense, and that needs to be thought through. But is there really such an alteration that you're providing a different service than you're providing otherwise? You're providing movies. Auxiliary means something extra to appreciate the movie, but that seems to be what we're talking about here.
No, I disagree, Your Honor, that auxiliary means what's an auxiliary aid or service is what's necessary to access.
How is this not what's necessary for them to access what you're showing?
Because there's no dispute that the disabled and everybody else have no limitation in terms of accessing the exhibition. of the movie theater. What they can't do is enjoy it as much because of the absence of captioning or descriptions. And let me make a point that I think is important. It goes to an earlier question.
Well, when somebody comes to the movie, they come for the purpose of enjoying it. And if you're not providing the basis to utilize what the studios have provided, you're preventing them from enjoying the movie.
Your Honor, for example, if the service that we choose to provide as a public accommodation is to exhibit the movie, just like the art museum exhibits the Mona Lisa, and if they choose to provide commentary about the Mona Lisa, either by an oral discussion by a docent or they have a plaque written up there, that additional service of that commentary may have to be accessible.
Or a headset. With a mini transmitter, and you walk through and it says you're now looking at Mona Lisa and here's the, her smile, and describe the whole thing.
That's correct, Your Honor. And my point, though, is that if the museum chooses to provide that additional service, it must make that service accessible. But if it does not, if all it does is exhibit the Mona Lisa and invite patrons to come in and look at it, then the Title III does not require it to go provide another service.
Well, but that's what we're here to decide. I mean, what you've just stated is your position. And I don't understand why it doesn't squarely fall within the auxiliary. I mean, we got an amicus brief from the United States, and the United States takes the position that it does. And, they're the ones who write the regs. Why shouldn't we view this as an auxiliary service?
Because, Your Honor, it's completely outside the scope of Title III in that it's a new service. It's not something that the art museum.
What does auxiliary mean if it doesn't mean something in addition to what is ordinarily provided?
But in the context of Title III, it's intended, as this court has previous and other circuits have said, there's a difference between access and content of the services that are being provided. What auxiliary means is that you have to provide the aids and services that are needed to allow access to the exhibition. That's the service we provide, is to exhibit the movie. There's no argument here that there's a barrier or something that prevents them from accessing that exhibition.
Believe it or not, there was a time when it would not have been implausible to somebody say, we provide the building with the steps. And if people want to walk in, they can use the steps just like anybody else. Now, today we take it for granted that buildings with ramps is part of the way you deal with it. You don't can no longer say, well, we can limit our buildings to, they can walk up the steps as well as anybody else. And this just strikes me as the same kind of argument, we choose to display the movie, and if you want to go in and look at it without knowing what they're saying, too bad. That doesn't strike me as a very generous or user-friendly approach. You ever tried on an airplane to watch the movie without, so playing overhead and try to figure out what they're saying without the sound, without plugging in the sound? It's really not the same experience.
It's not even close, Your Honor, I grant you that. I agree with that. But your analogy to the steps, I think, is completely a different situation in the sense that...
That's why it's an analogy.
Yes.
Why isn't it a good analogy?
It's not a good analogy,
Your Honor. Valid analogy.
Because the service that this court provides is justice within this courtroom. And in order to be able to access that service, one needs to climb the stairs. Just like
they can crawl up the stairs. What's the big deal? Or they can have somebody carry them up the stairs. I mean, if you want to make that argument, if they want to reach justice, let them find somebody who will carry them up the stairs.
and the building has ramps.
We actually have a Supreme Court case that had to deal with that issue, whether you had to crawl up the courthouse steps.
Right.
And so lawyers, just like you, stood there and made that argument. Now, today we laugh at it. We say, you know, it's just silly for anybody to argue that. And I don't know why we're not going to be laughing at what you're saying, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years from now.
Well,
why this isn't just as, if I might say, silly or so implausible argument as the courthouse steps argument?
Well, Your Honor, I think it goes to another, let me try another analogy. It's clear that both doctor's offices and hotels are places of public accommodation. But yet, hotels are, and it's also clear that a telecommunications device for the deaf, or a TDD, can be a auxiliary aid or service. Yet, a hotel, at least those of a certain size, are required to provide TDDs, and doctor's offices generally are not. Why is that? Well, it's because it's because a doctor's office doesn't provide, while a hotel, one of the services it chooses to provide is to allow outgoing calls to its guests. And in order to access that service.
How about hospitals? Do hospitals have to provide them? I think that's a more apt analogy. Doctor's office is a small business, and we often in the law make exceptions for very small businesses. Doctor's office are same. So the analogy really is hospitals. So what is the story with TDDs and hospitals?
So the question becomes whether the hospital, one of the services it provides to the patients is to provide outgoing calls. And clearly it does. And so in that situation, in order to allow a deaf person to have access.
So your theater may not be in the business of providing calls, so it doesn't need the telephone. Your theater is in the business of displaying movies. The people we're talking about can't appreciate the movies. They're not going to make a phone call. They're going to watch the movie. So how does that analogy fit?
Well, it fits, Your Honor, in that what I'm trying to demonstrate or suggest is that it is critical to define what is the service.
Well, but
they're going to see the movies.
They are. The service we provide is to exhibit the movie, and our position is that they have access to the movie, and the additional service.
Let me ask you a factual question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because this conversation hasn't produced very much. Is it factually the case, as the plaintiff asserts, that the film studios make captions and descriptions available in many first-run wide-release films?
They do.
Is there additional cost to the theater as a result of that to display it in that form?
Yes. They have to have the equipment.
But the film itself comes from the studio on the same terms that it would come to the studio if you happen to elect the version that doesn't have that capacity.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Your Honor, let me also address the issue that was raised earlier about the Arizonans with Disabilities Act.
So that almost undermines your idea that it's a different service. I mean, you know, what it is, you're providing movies that come from Hollywood. And if they provide this technology, why isn't that part of what, in fact, is being provided? And what you're doing is basically like blocking off part of what's available in the movies you present.
Well, we think that we have the right under, and Title III doesn't take away the right to choose which services we want to provide. And we don't have, just because somebody gives an art museum some plaques to put up on the wall by the Mona Lisa, they're not required under Title III to post those so that somebody can read those or feel the braille text of it.
Maybe not yet.
Maybe not yet. Your Honor, it is significant in that with respect to the Arizonans with Disabilities Act, that the...
No, the theaters cost huge amounts of money. It's no longer a movie theater. It's no longer a barn with a sheet at one end and a bunch of chairs, right? There are multiplexes, stadium seating. You've got all sorts of really sophisticated technology, 3D viewing and so on. This just seems like a drop in the bucket. I mean, just strikes me as being almost nothing at all in terms of the great scheme of things. Why are you fighting this battle that is you're going to lose eventually? I don't know if you're going to lose this case or not, but you're going to lose this battle in the end. And you can get out in front of it and be the good guys, or you can go in, being dragged and kicking and screaming and have to do it in the end anyway, and look like jerks. I mean, I don't understand why you're choosing to fight this battle.
Your Honor,
the same question.
Yeah, and let me try one more time to answer that because I got interrupted last time.
Yeah.
There is timing is significant here because this is a developing technology. This isn't something that there's two or three different types of closed captioning that's commercially available for purchase. Moreover, the industry is in the midst of a transition from film to
digital.
Digital, thank you. And that transition it causes havoc with respect to the purchase of an equipment right now. A substantial outlay for equipment to be able to do this today with film may be totally worthless tomorrow when we're all converted into a digital format. So the timing is significant for Harkins and every other movie theater in the industry.
Isn't that sort of an undue burden inquiry? And isn't that the kind of thing to say you accept basically that's where we're going? And then work with the other side to make the timing and the rollout way that's acceptable financially to your client, and also takes into account the needs and the timing of the plaintiffs in the state of Arizona. This strikes me as a kind of case where you ought to be working together rather than fighting. This is a case where lawyers can be healers rather than warriors, and where you want to get together and serve your public better, right?
I mean,
this is what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right, Your Honor. And what's not in the record is the efforts that have gone on between the parties. It's not a situation. We're not coming here.
You're all here. You've got your general counsel here. You've got counsel for the state. You've got a number of the plaintiffs and their lawyers. Why don't you all go down to the cafeteria after this and chat about it? Right next to the cafeteria is our mediation office. Really great mediators, really world-class mediators. And let me just recommend, I'm speaking on behalf of my colleagues.
And we did use the mediation service, Your Honor.
Well, maybe not enough, you know. This may be a good time after you've heard what we had to say just try to work it out. I mean, you don't want to get behind this issue. You don't want to come off as having been forced to do something that you should in the public interest and interest of serving your audience and your public. That you should willingly and cheerfully and happily do, right? So we will submit the case. But if you all think that there might be some settlement possible, that would be good. But this is very early in the case, and maybe settlement is best done in the district court. But this is a good place to start. I mean, you've got, you know, everybody here, that matters. You know, you've seen some technology at work. It can be done. You know, if we can do it on a couple of days' notice, I have confidence that movie theaters in Arizona are up to the task.
Thank you, Your Honor. If there's no other questions, I'll submit.
Okay. You've more than taken your time. Do you think there's any need for rebuttal?
Okay.
Your point, Your Honor, about that it is that maybe in a few years we'll be looking at this is that, and the issue of the stairs and now this issue, is that the ADA set it up with not only failure to provide, you need to remove architectural barriers, that's discrimination if you don't, and you need to provide auxiliary aids and services, and it's discrimination if you don't. The time is now, if we accept the district court's position with respect to that, or Harkin's position with respect to auxiliary aids and services, then we are losing the vitality and the relevancy of Title III.
You are willing to work with the theaters to try to make this work on a reasonable time basis, right? I mean, this is not something that has to happen instantly tomorrow. I mean, it can be rolled out. Is this the kind of matter that can be mediated and talked about, you know, where the lawyers can do more than fight with each other in court?
Yes, we have attempted, and we will attempt to do it.
I know you will.
And the other thing I'd say, if you look at the scope of our lawsuit, you will see that we attempted to take a reasonable thing, not asking for it.
I'm not pointing the finger at anybody. I don't think this is a good time to point fingers. I think this is a good time to maybe sit and think about what this oral argument, what you've learned from this oral argument, and maybe go out and go forward and try to solve the problem.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Bumbar Cafeteria. Yes.
We don't get a cut of it, so.
Okay. Case just argued will stand submitted. We are adjourned.